Some people I'm working on a project with had set up a meeting for me for November 11th. So the meeting was set up for 11:11, and they set it for 11 o'clock, and it was on the 11th floor, if you can believe that. Dr. Stephen Greer is the founder, CEO of Space Energy Access Systems, and also the founder and director of the Disclosure Project. He is an emergency physician and former chairman of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Caldwell Memorial Hospital. Dr. Greer is a lifetime member of Alpha Omega Alpha, the nation's most prestigious medical honor society. He's appeared on several national programs, of course, including Coast to Coast, and also the Larry King Show, CBS, the BBC, and NTV in Japan. Dr. Greer has been supervising a worldwide search for alternative energy sources, specifically those known as zero-point or over-unity devices, with the plan to identify and develop systems which will eliminate the need for fossil fuels. And I hope he's successful. We're going to talk about several things tonight with Dr. Stephen Greer. Of course, his Disclosure Project, and of course, cpower.com, the company that he is heading up. So welcome to Coast. Stephen, how are you, my friend? Good to talk with you again.
Good to hear from you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
I wanted to ask you this, Stephen, if we can. Let's just go back just a little bit for a moment.
Sure.
When you developed the Disclosure Project and you started to put together the people and the puzzle to try to at least get the government to reveal to us some more information, what happened in your life to do that? I mean, here you are, a doctor, a medical doctor. All of a sudden, you're involved in this project. What happened? How did that happen?
Well, you know, it was evolved over many years. As a young kid, actually when I was 8 or 9 years old, I saw one of these UFOs not far from where I was, where I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina. And this coincided with a time when my uncle, my mom's oldest brother, was a senior project engineer for the lunar module. He helped design the lunar module that took Neil Armstrong to the moon. So as a young man, I became, of course, very interested not only in space, but these unusual things that people call UFOs. And that became a lifelong interest. Back in 1990, some things happened where I had another sighting of these objects, and I began to look into it again and concluded that not only were they real, which of course I always knew they were, but that it was time for us to do two things. One, we started the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or CSETI, and a project of which is the Disclosure Project. And we had two purposes. One was to go out and begin to look all over the world where these objects were being reported and attempt to make contact with the objects or signal to them, and we did this. And this very quickly got the attention of people like the head of Army Intelligence and friends of the U.S. President and the CIA director and other people, because even though a lot of people thought this was implausible, what had happened is that we succeeded in basically uncovering a bit of the Rosetta Stone, if you will, of how to contact and communicate with these objects. So from 1990 to 1993, when we launched that project of contact and research in real time all over the world, what evolved from that was a network of people who came to us who said, you know, you're on the right track, but more than that, here's what's already being done in ultra-secret, in fact, illegally managed covert projects. And at first I thought this was not terribly plausible. Until, you know, first a few of these government and military insiders became a dozen, mm-hmm. and then 40, and then over 100 by 2001, and now around 450 to 500, and they keep being identified on a weekly basis. In fact, I'm going to share with your listeners tonight some new information from some of these people who have come forward from the aerospace industry that my uncle was involved with for his entire career. So little by little, as it were, from age 8 till age 49, which is what I am now, this whole matter became something of tremendous consuming interest. And so much so, of course, that you know, by 1993 and 94, I was doing briefings for President Clinton's CIA director and his senior people and the folks at the Pentagon who wanted to know about a lot of these projects that were being managed, and that we're looking into this whole area of aerospace technology and advanced propulsion and energy systems and reconnaissance of extraterrestrial vehicles, or ETVs, which is actually what they're called in those circles. But a lot of people, of course, initially couldn't believe it, and I didn't initially myself,
yeah.
that folks like the CIA director were flat out denied access to these sort of projects, and that they were so compartmentalized, and it was so Byzantine, and so, quite frankly, rogue and illegal in how they were being managed, that very senior members of our government were being blocked from knowing about it. So we had a group of people that became sort of ad hoc advisors and briefers, if I can use that word, for folks in the Congress and the Senate. And, you know, I met with people in the Senate Intelligence Committee and people who, for example, the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency and the head of intelligence for the Joint Staff and many of these other sorts of senior positions. And so it was really a long process, and where we are today is sending, we're basically just have an enormous database of documents and insiders, whistleblowers, if you want to call them that.
Sure.
And it has now expanded to being able to identify specific corporations and individuals and institutions that are running these projects and who, quite frankly, and quite tragically, are running the ship of state into the iceberg. So, you know, we're trying to steer the Titanic away from that, but unfortunately, there are some people who are just hell-bent on the current course we're on, and we can talk more about that later.
Did you sense a frustration with some of these heads of departments, for example, Stephen, who were not given the access that they probably thought they were entitled to? I mean, were they frustrated?
Well, of course. I mean, here I am, an emergency trauma physician in his 30s, sitting with a CIA director, CIA director, who's virtually in tears by the end of this three-hour meeting because he's saying to me that, well, you know, we would like to have this information disclosed, and the president is interested, and we're interested, but how do we disclose what we don't have access to? And I'll give you, for example, back in 1997, we got together quite a few members of Congress and senior staffers and brought in about a dozen of these military and intelligence witnesses that we had identified. And the people can go on our website, disclosureproject.org, and see a lot of that testimony and get it. And basically, I went over after this one meeting with all the congressmen the next day and ended up briefing an admiral who was head of the J-2 position, the head of intelligence, Joint Chiefs of Staff. And prior to the meeting, and this is a very interesting little bit of detail, I had given this man, through my military advisor and our points of contact to him, code numbers and code names of specific projects that were current dealing with this subject. And we have them. And, of course, he took them and he made inquiries. And sure enough, he hit one of these highly compartmentalized and very shadowy operations. And they, of course, at that point, couldn't deny their existence.
Exactly.
And they said, turned to the admiral and said, well, sir, you don't have a need to know. And he said, what do you mean I don't have a need to know? I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Staff. And this is, you know, now, I'm sitting, this is being directly related to me by someone at that level.
Yeah.
I'm sitting at the Pentagon. So, you know, it turned my life, quite frankly, upside down, and it's extraordinary. But what I learned from it is that the assumptions that people make when they say the government is hiding this from us, well, it's true. There are highly classified and illegally run cells, if you want to call them, or compartmentalized projects that deal with this. But, you know, 99% of the people at the Pentagon or the agency or the NSA have no knowledge of this subject. And, in fact, they're more likely to listen to this show to find out what's going on than in any other way, quite frankly. Tragically, this extends all the way up to the level of the presidency and to senior members of Congress who are supposed to know. Now, at this point in history, and this, of course, has evolved from the 1940s to the present day, the real action is really both transnational and corporate. The big action is in operations at Lockheed and Northrop, contractors for these big covert projects, Science Applications International Corporation, and people I know who is on their board and who's been involved in those projects. So there are large multi-billion-dollar operations dealing with this subject, but they're very, very shadowy and very hard to unravel. In 1994, I was meeting with Senator Byrd of West Virginia as the chief counsel and an attorney who had a top-secret clearance and subpoena power, and I had a private meeting with him at the Senate Appropriations Committee meeting room, and
yes.
He said, look, this subject, he knew it existed. He says, but with a top-secret clearance and a subpoena, I have not been able to penetrate it. He said, and I'm quoting here, this man said, you are dealing with the varsity team of all super-secret projects. Good luck. And that's kind of how the meeting ended. So, you know, that was January of 94, February 94. So it's been quite a journey, and I can say that it's been, in turn, frustrating for me, but also quite enlightening to learn how power is exercised, who has it, and what's the agenda. And this is really what we need to talk about. What is the agenda, and how do the people who are listening to this show affect its outcome?
That's right, and how can we change it before it's too late? You know, these 400-plus government, military, and intelligence witnesses who have continued to help feed you information have got to be heroes, I would guess, don't you think?
They are, and I tell people if they get on our website, disclosureproject.org, and see these guys. You know, I had a filmmaker and a media person in London contact me last week who said he had no idea this sort of evidence and this sort of smoking gun and deep throat whistleblower sort of testimony existed on this. And he was just completely, well, he was British, so he said he was gobsmacked. I laughed. And I said, well, you know, we're trying to move that out as best we can. And we continue to reach folks. For example, ABC News is doing a special on this that's going to air in February, as you know. And,
yes.
But the main thing is that the people who are listening to shows like this, millions of people, need to understand there's action they can take to help that process. And if we don't act, you know, I mean, as the old adage is, you know, the only thing that allows for evil to prevail is for good people to do nothing. And all we have to do is look back to World War II and the rise of Hitler and all that to see that is very true. So people do need to take responsibility, and we do need to protect our democracy. Eisenhower, who is one of my heroes, I mean, he was, of course, a conservative Republican, and I'm a very nonpartisan person, but he very was much hit the nail on the head when he said, you know, there is this military-industrial complex that will erode our security and will be a threat to our democracy if we're not vigilant. And, of course, one of our witnesses was an aide to President Eisenhower, Brigadier General Lovkin, who's an attorney in North Carolina, is one of our witnesses. And he was a young man at the time in 1959, 1960, and he personally saw the U.S. president getting UFO reports, handling some of the information, but also saw that he was specifically, and this is a five-star general and a conservative Republican president,
yeah,
being lied to and being blocked and denied into these corporate projects that had the technologies and were running with them. And he was very frustrated. And, you know, so this is a dysfunctional situation that goes all the way back at least into the 1950s.
See, they knew these, I think, multinational corporations. They knew these presidents would come and go.
Of course.
Every four or eight years, and that they're the ones that wanted to sustain themselves for a very long time.
That's right. And just like a CIA director comes and goes every two,
yes,
to 6 years, or the chairman of the Joint Staff. Or, you know, I personally sat at the Pentagon with the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Now, I have witnesses inside that agency, the DIA, who have handled sensitive material related to this subject, yet when the general in charge of that agency made inquiries, the only thing he got, now I'm not kidding, I'm sitting here at the Pentagon with my military advisor, and the general gets up and walks over to his bookcase and takes a little E.T. doll off the bookcase and brings it over. He says, this, Dr. Greer, is all I've ever gotten out of my inquiries into this subject. I've gotten nothing but laughter and ridicule. And this is a man who is the general in charge of the Defense Intelligence Agency at the time. So, you know, and yet I'm giving him documents and testimony from the DIA. So the whole thing is To use the word dysfunctional is an enormous understatement, quite frankly.
Well, and the people you had involved, for example, in that May 9, 2001 press conference, unfortunately, because of the tragedy of 9/11, it took some of the thunder away. But I think you're now regrouping, Stephen, and the momentum is going to start again. But these are real people. They're not Hollywood actors.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're out there. They're government people, military people who decided, you know what? I'm not going to suppress this anymore, and they went forward.
That's right, and these are all people that we have their DD-214s, their discharge forms. We have multiple corroboration of their presence at places. Many of the categories of events, we have multiple witnesses and documents to corroborate what happened. So, you know, when people say, you know, where's the smoking gun? Where's the evidence? I said, well, we have it. You know, can you read English? I said that once to a scientist, and he laughed. I said, well, if you can read English, we have it. And if you can't, at least it's now been translated. The whole disclosure transcript book that we have, which is nearly 600 pages, has now been translated into French and is being distributed throughout the country of France right now. But I tell you, you know, on our website, disclosureproject.org, people can see this two-hour press conference, but also you can get either a one-hour or two-hour or four-hour videotape of all these military witnesses. And by the way, these are not people with a fuzzy blob over their face with a fake name.
No.
They're shown name, rank, and serial number, the whole nine yards.
The real McCoy.
And it isn't one or two of them. It's dozens and dozens and dozens of them.
Well, and they keep coming. And so are they still coming? Are you're getting new people who want to disclose?
Yes. In fact, in the last week, we have had several, one of whom is an important aerospace top-secret Lockheed contractor, and I am going to share with you verbatim what he has shared with us, and I'm going to ask for other people to come out to corroborate what I'm going to share. It's a very important bit of information.
When we make the switch at the half here, Stephen, and then we'll come back and talk about that, what took some of them so long? I mean, here we are. You had this major disclosure project in 2001. You're still getting more and more people. What's getting them to realize, I'm going to go public?
Well, there are many issues. Number one, I think the biggest one was that there was a leadership vacuum. These were people who didn't know each other for the most part. They were isolated. They needed, in a sense, a support structure, and that's what we created. And I sort of created the leadership to do it, but they're the ones who really stuck their necks out. I mean, I tell people I'm just a country doctor here in Virginia who got involved with this. But these guys who had and have, in many cases, top secret clearances, really needed the support. And when there became this critical mass of a few of them and then dozens of them and then, you know, 400 or 500 of them, they felt safe to do it. They felt they wouldn't be ridiculed. And they trusted us not to mesh in a whole bunch of speculative, crazy stuff, that we kept it very oriented towards the testimony, the documents, the evidence, and that was our agreement with them, and they trusted us to do it.
Well, what I have liked about you, Stephen, in the years that I heard you even talking with Art Bell, was this no-nonsense approach that you have taken to this very serious subject, and I think it is so important now that approach comes forward, and you know, we'll do as much as we can for you here on this program to do that.
We appreciate your help.
Dr. Stephen Greer, our guest, will be back in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. Stephen, you're talking to us about an aerospace contractor who I assume has come to you then very, very, very soon in this disclosure project, or was it much later?
No, this has all been in the last week.
Just the last week?
Right, which is why, you know, I feel it's important to share. And he specifically wanted me to share it because it's a time-sensitive and evolving situation, where you'll see why in a moment. I think it's important for people to hear this. And I think others listening, remember, one of the ways that we've been able to corroborate things is that we will go out to the public in a show like this and say, look, if there are other people who know about this event or this project, please contact me personally through disclosureproject.org, our website, and we will, of course, work with you in whatever way we can. And so it's important that this kind of networking happen. This is really, it's very grassroots, you know. I mean, it's not as if, you know, somehow we waved a magic wand and all this happened. It's really a lot of hard work and networking, and we rely on the public and people out there listening who are concerned and interested in this issue to make this happen. And that's really how it has happened, really.
Absolutely. And again, the disclosureproject.org is the way to get back to you, right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, this person, this individual, how did he come to you?
Well, he approached us actually through the website, and then we've gone back and forth and communicated with him. And he is a guy who with Lockheed Martin. Do you want me to just share what he told us?
Absolutely, Stephen.
It's really quite good. He said it better than I could. It's interesting because in one of the follow-on conversations that we had, he said, you know, he says, we are watching this project, meaning the Disclosure Project, with great interest and may elect to reveal more identities later. I am very new to this sort of thing. Before a few weeks ago, I was pretty certain UFOs did not exist as bona fide extraterrestrials and thought people who came forward were touched. Now he doesn't take it so lightly. It's very interesting because of the project that he has now gotten intelligence on. So this man is a career aerospace guy, like my uncle was. Mm-hmm. And what he says is, I'll just share this with you. He says, part of me is deathly afraid to come forward with this information, but I feel it is my patriotic duty to do so. I have spent a great deal of my professional career with Lockheed Martin, including an extended period at the facility in Marietta, Georgia. Much of my work is classified, and I categorically will not divulge my identity publicly at this time. I am too concerned for the safety of my family and those of my colleagues. And, you know, which is understandable,
right,
of course.
That is.
As you may know, Lockheed Martin has been involved in multiple stages of the Cassini mission to Saturn. Images from the craft are processed and analyzed at the Space Science Institute in Boulder, Colorado, which is where my main contacts are located. To get right to the point, some of these images have revealed the presence of not one, but several large craft of non-terrestrial origin. I have sketched them on, and the sketch is of has been directly observed by the people he works with. I don't want to name them.
Mm-hmm.
The angles present on the craft are such that they would not generally occur in nature, and therefore it is clear they are not asteroids or other debris caught in the gravitational pull of the planet. And listen to the description, it's fascinating. The objects are ridged saucers, classic flying saucer shapes, with several spoked ridges radiating from the center to create a near prismatic shape. Seen from above, they have a shape somewhat like a spider's orb web. What I refer to as spokes do not appear to be separate structures, but are formed from the skin of the craft. The description is as if it is like a bat's wing. If you can imagine the skin of a bat covering the fingers that give structure to the wings.
That's a good analogy, too.
Okay, yeah, it's very interesting. It's an excellent description. The photos are clear. I do not know much more about these objects or craft, except their presence was not entirely unexpected. This is very interesting. And that they have not caused any particular alarm in the various agencies. But the suppression of the images was followed as a matter of due course. And it goes on. I don't want to take a lot of time because I think it's not polite to read, but that gives an idea of the sort of intelligence. Now, this is an ongoing thing that's just been imaged, there is something that's out on the web now that's a Cassini image that is pretty certain to be an artifact. This, however, what he's describing is clearly artificial structures moving there. Now, it's interesting because he says this was not unexpected. And what I point out to people is that that's because ever since we've been sending anything up into space, we have been encountering these objects, including the lunar landing.
Oh, they're following us, aren't they?
Yeah. And, and they, of course, are watching everything that we're doing as civilization,
sure.
And obviously are concerned about, in my opinion, the development of weapons in space, the development of weapons of mass destruction, and a civilization that is still killing millions of our own people in warfare, going out into space at this stage of our social and, if you will, spiritual evolution. So, but at any rate, the fact that, of course, he stumbled across this fairly new. He wasn't someone who was involved in this sort of thing until very recently. But it was interesting. He picked up on the fact that it was not unexpected that they would encounter it, which, of course, is what I would expect, having now many, many different witnesses from various agencies and corporations who have corroborated encounters with these objects, not only in near-Earth orbit, but also near the Moon, Mars, and some of the outer planets during reconnaissance and space probes and what have you.
And what he says, even though this information is new about Cassini and Saturn, what he says is not unlike then what some of these other witnesses have told you in the past.
Exactly. It's an identical and corroborative pattern. And I think that it only makes sense, of course, that that would be the case. For example, we have a couple of witnesses who were involved in the lunar orbiter. Of course, this was the mapping and the probes we sent up to the moon before we actually landed in July of 1969. And one of our witnesses was at Langley, where there was a secret facility run by the National Security Agency at the time that had a multinational staffing, but super secret, where they were taking images and sequestering them that were showing objects and artificial structures already on the moon. And these are lunar orbiter pictures back in the mid-60s before we landed in 69. So, and it was processed, it was very routine, and this witness we have was in there and saw this and worked with a man who pulled out these enormous pictures that he was working on and processing, and showed him these structures. So, of course, that witness is in the disclosure book and in the videos that people can see at disclosureproject.org. But the way that was handled, and the way this man now, of course, years later—I mean, we're talking 40 years later—is describing this is very, very, very similar.
How were you able, because he hasn't disclosed who he is, and I can understand.
No, he has. We do know that.
Oh, you do know who he is. You just can't tell us.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's good, because I was going to say, you feel he is authentic then.
Oh, yes, and there's no doubt about that. But what he's wanting us to do, and the reason I'm sharing this, is that there are other people who I'm sure have knowledge of this and similar handling of the subject that we would like to come forward and approach us, and I invite people to do that and to let us know if they have further information on this and related matters.
Well, you talk about the role of some of these corporations, Stephen. What are they doing? I mean, are they trying to duplicate these objects? Are they developing systems that may be somewhat related? What is their exact role?
Well, they have multiple roles, depending on which corporation. The real action, the very important action that's been going on since the 40s and 50s, and which frustrated President Eisenhower so much, as well as President Clinton and others, is an equal opportunity sort of covert program in terms of rogue action until recently. Now, I don't know if you want to get into this.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it, sure.
This is difficult, and I, you know, anyone who knows me knows that I am very nonpartisan, and but quite frankly, not the current president, but those behind him are in the core of this group and are in the core of the agenda.
And it is the
most dangerous situation the United States has been in since its founding.
And it could be very possible that he doesn't even know what's going on with this.
Well, the problem is, this is very difficult for me to say because two-thirds of my people who support me are conservative Republicans, but if we put George W. Bush and that administration back in there until 2009, we are almost certainly going to put ourselves further down the path of a global militaristic agenda that's going to end up with a tragedy of unspeakable proportions. Unfortunately, the current president, now his father is deeply involved in these issues. Cheney is, and Rumsfeld is. I have documents and people to establish this. Now, people are going to be disturbed when they hear this. You know, I always ask people, do you really want to hear the truth or not? I feel like, what is that movie, A Few Good Men, when Jack Nicholson says, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah.
And but I have to tell you that what I have learned about the current administration being hijacked, quite frankly, particularly this president, and in many quarters of the Republican Party, 99.9% of them don't know about this stuff, but they have been hijacked and used, and I quite frankly believe subverted to an agenda that is anathema to American democracy.
Well, don't you think that even if a different administration comes in, that those same power mongers will be able to flex their influence?
No, not in the same way. Here's the difference. Clinton, for example, was completely forced out of this picture. Now, he didn't do anything to fix it. And here's where my beef with the Clinton administration is. I'm an equal opportunity.
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to come down on all sides of this, and I'll probably make everyone angry at me. But I was extremely disappointed that President Clinton, who was specifically briefed by our team on this and given full evidence and was asked to take executive action to fix this problem before it was too late, quite frankly, didn't have the fortitude to do it. But that's very different than actually being the fox that's guarding the hen house, getting in the hen house. And that's what we have with the current administration. It is the greatest threat to the American democracy, to our environment, and to the future of this planet, I believe, since the United States was founded. And my mother's family were some of the original founders of the United States. So, look, I'm no flaming liberal by any means, but I will tell you that if this particular administration is not put on a shorter leash, we are in for some major troubles. And forget about 9/11 and forget about the Iraq War. We're talking about things that will be 100 times worse than that.
Well, I'm going to have to ask you, Stephen, to tell me what you're talking about, though. What in specifics here?
I'm talking about the fact that the Bush administration, not the president himself, because he's frankly, in my opinion, W is a terrible victim of a long-term agenda that involves a cabal or a group of people that include his father, Cheney, and Rumsfeld, and many other people, including these corporate lackeys I'm talking about, that have manipulated things to cause the current president to make decisions that have been disastrous. In other words, I hate to use the word patsy, but he has been ill-served, profoundly ill-served by those people. The problem is, if he's reelected, those same people are going to be in there.
Okay, but how does this equate to what you investigate with disclosure, Zero Point Energy? That's what I need. I need to know where this tie-in is.
The tie-in is that the people who are in the current situation with the current administration
right.
are people who have long-term ties to the cover-up of the UFO issue, the illegal management of these corporate and military and intelligence operations.
Okay.
They are the people
right, let's,
and hidden in plain sight.
Let's assume that's true.
And that is, well, it is true.
But this has been going on now for 60 years with various groups of people.
But not at that level of power. See, it's one thing if it's covert power and is being manipulated behind the scenes. It's another thing if that covert power emerges and seizes overt power of the executive branch of the U.S. government. And that's what we have. And I can't say it more clearly. It's a dangerous situation. And, you know, I have very good friends who know what I just told you. And they are lifelong Republicans who raise money for the Republican Party. And they have told me, you're absolutely right. I can't vote for Kerry, but I will not pull the lever for Bush and Cheney after they have learned what is going on. Now, that is an astonishing thing. I mean, no less a figure than Dwight Eisenhower's son, who's a lifelong Republican, came out and said as much, but not related to this issue. But a lot of the insiders know it is related to this issue, that there is a transnational agenda that is global, militaristic, very dangerous, and it is ramped up. It has been ramped up tremendously in the last 3 or 4 years, and I think it's going to get worse unless the American people learn about this and make a decision for a change, and it needs to happen.
What do you think on the gross downside of all this? What do you think could happen?
Frankly, I think that there's this wonderful Chinese expression that says, unless we change directions, we're likely to end up where we're going. Quite clearly, the current direction that these people have forced America into is going to lead to a much worsened terrorism situation. But eventually, the agenda, now remember, this is what Wernher von Braun's spokesperson reported to us, Dr. Rosin, that Wernher von Braun, the inventor of the rocket, told her on his deathbed, I have multiple other corroborating witnesses who have been in the CIA and the Air Force NRO office and others who have corroborated this, that what their long agenda has been is to go from the Cold War to global terrorism. Now, remember, we reported this in the Disclosure Project before 9/11, and that would then be replaced with hoaxing a threat from outer space and unifying the world around a global military response that would push us into sort of an Armageddon scenario out in space. It sounds insane, but if you had told someone that 9/11 was going to happen the way it did, or the way they say it did, people would have said that you were, you know, smoking something.
Yeah,
the fact is that this agenda has been outlined since the 60s, and there are people in the current administration who have ties back to the 60s and 70s, literally, being involved in setting this agenda. Now, do most Republicans know that? Absolutely not. But they need to know it because their party has been used and hijacked by these interests, and it is very, very dangerous. Now, in the past, let's say back in the 50s and 60s, there was sort of more of an equal sort of bipartisan infiltration, but that has shifted. It has shifted radically over the last 5 to 10 years. And this is a real tragedy. You know, I sat with Barry Goldwater. I don't know if you remember Senator Goldwater.
Oh, I sure do.
Who ran for president in 64, and great guy. I sat at his home personally and spoke with him for an entire afternoon about
it. And there was one television commercial that LBJ laid out there that wiped him out, and that was that picture
right.
of that nuclear explosion.
Let me tell you, you know, Barry Goldwater was a big supporter of what we were trying to do. I have a letter from him.
Right, I remember
now,
that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Now, he and I talked about this, and he told me then, and this is 1994 or 5, I can't remember, back in the mid-90s, and Barry, Senator Goldwater said to me, he said, well, Dr. Greer, he says, you know that my party, which, you know, he was sort of the founder of the modern conservative wing of the GOP, he says, it's been hijacked by these sort of interests. And I looked at him. I said, well, how much of that do you know about? He says, well, it absolutely has. And it was interesting to hear his take on it as sort of the scion and sort of this big lion figure within the Republican establishment bewailing this to me. Now, I've never said this publicly. We talked a lot about UFOs and about covert programs and folks he knew that he was going to try to help get to help us, who ended up bashing him in the head, quite frankly. They were furious with him. But you want me to name them?
I want you to hold that, though. We're going to take this break, come back. I want to talk to you a little bit more about this, Stephen, because, you know, if almost every president, though, has been had a blanket put over his head, what makes you think the same's not going to happen if someone else gets elected, for example? I'll be back with that. We'll talk about alternative energy sources when we come right back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Stephen Greer. Stephen, the point I wanted to make before the top of the hour is if these puppet masters, no matter who they may be, are there, it doesn't matter who is in office because they're still going to pull strings.
Well, of course they're going to pull strings, but it's one thing if the puppet master is pulling it from behind the scenes covertly, versus whether or not they've been able to get completely direct control of the agencies of the executive branch of government. The other thing to remember is that we the people have to keep these guys on the straight and narrow and keep them honest and, if at all possible, be alert to what they're doing. Remember what Eisenhower said. He said only an alert citizenry who would be active and watching could prevent these excesses. And if you read his speech, the last speech Eisenhower gave to the nation when he left office in January of 1961, he made that point very forcefully. And I think that that's the point I'm making, is that we have to be vigilant that, you know, again, I've never been involved in partisan politics. I don't like politics. But the fact of the matter is the executive branch of the government is very powerful. Now, it only has the power that the person in that position is willing to exercise. Now, for example, in the case of President Clinton, he had the power, but he was afraid to use it. A good friend of his, point blank, came to my home and said, "I'm afraid, we're afraid that if the president does what you're recommending, he'll end up like Jack Kennedy." And I burst out laughing. I literally burst out. I thought the guy was joking, because this was back in 94. And he said, "No, we're not joking." And, of course, I was stunned. I said, "You have to be kidding." And this is a very close friend of President Clinton. And I said, "Well, look, I'm a country doctor in Virginia. I'm here in an emergency department. Here's what I found. He's the president. The buck stops there. But the people have to watch what's happening with the buck. And does it actually make its way to that point, or is it being hijacked partway in? In this case, you have a situation where you have a U.S. president whose administration are filled with leaders of this sort of cabal that are part of the military, industrial, oil, energy complex that have kept this stuff secret and have kept us on the path that we're on. So I think that this is something, again, whether or not W has extensive knowledge of it, I'm pretty sure he doesn't, because I know people who are close to him, but that's what's happened, and it's a tragedy, and I don't think it's going to be fixed. Now, let's say that another person comes in there, but his administration will not be filled with those sort of operatives directly. It'll be at a greater distance and with more difficulty to move those sort of agendas forward. That's the point I'm making. Now, I'm not making any other points at all about political issues, but if people ask, and you did ask, what is going on, who's behind this and why, that is a big part of the agenda. And it has infiltrated many agencies and, unfortunately, the political process like it had never been infiltrated before.
And that's isn't this, though, a worldwide problem for everybody on this planet?
It is absolutely transnational. And, of course, the United States is a key player in it. But remember, the agenda that has been operating, even in the 50s and 60s, I have folks who have assured me that there were covert programs in the United States working with the Soviet Union during the worst days of the Cold War cooperatively on these same issues. So this has been something that's been managed off the radar screen in a very shadowy way. But that shadowy sort of super government has now emerged into the legitimate government.
Well, see, but
it's metastasized there. It's a very dangerous thing.
Let's go back, though. Since really 1947, during Roswell, where disclosure has never come.
That's right. That was Truman, remember.
And it kept building and building and building.
Right.
My point is that it doesn't matter who gets elected. Disclosure is going to come only if people continue to come forward.
Correct.
And force.
But at a certain point, we need to be sure that the sort of really scary agendas that have a strong, quite frankly, eschatological component to it are not overly empowered. And I'm telling you, they have been overly empowered in the last 4 years, worse than in the previous 50 all put together. So we have to be careful. And this is a subject that doesn't get talked about in political circles. People don't want to talk about it. And frankly, I don't like politics. But the fact is, we have got to be, as Eisenhower said, the citizenry have to be alert to the risks to our democracy from these sort of things happening. And it has happened tragically. It has been empowered greatly in the last few years. And I think that the people out here who are listening to this have to understand that there are consequences. A lot of people say, "Oh, it doesn't matter who you vote for." Well, it most certainly does if there's things like this at stake. For example, there are members of Congress, both sides of the aisle over the course of history that I know of, who have been involved in these very shadowy and rogue operations. For example, a Congressman Brown of California, who was a Democrat, was very heavily involved, and I have witnesses who place him at a secret facility of being involved with a former Secretary of Defense on these things. On the other hand, there are current people in the current Congress. Now, you know, a lot of people always say, "Well, Dr. Greer, who are you talking about? You're so vague." And if I get specific, then they get pissed off. So, you know, it's like what Brian O'Leary, my friend who's the Apollo astronaut, said, "You know, the truth will set you free, but first it might piss you off. The fact of the matter is, much of this stuff is going on in almost plain sight, but people haven't connected the dots of what this agenda is. And the agenda, as you point out correctly, it is transnational, and it has spanned many decades. But it's also been greatly empowered by the current structure and administration. So this is something that is worrisome to me. As someone who's completely an independent and nonpartisan.
Well, you don't sound like it, Stephen.
I am. I mean, believe me.
I mean, nobody would believe that.
Well, it's because they don't understand. You know, it's like when someone says, is it a partisan issue? Well, it happens to be involved in the political process, so how do you avoid that? You know, I mean, I don't think Dwight Eisenhower's son is an anti-Republican partisan at all, but he's concerned. There are things happening that should be of great concern.
Yeah, but since Eisenhower, we've had, what, 9 presidents? If you count them all up?
No, I'm talking about Eisenhower's son.
No, I know that, but I'm saying since Dwight Eisenhower, we've had 9 presidents, okay? Have any of them helped to fully disclose, for example, one of the things you were investigating, and that's UFOs? Not one.
That's right, and this has been this is an equal opportunity assessment of where the problem is. It's two areas. One, it's like the sins of omission. I hate to use that term, but you know, in the case of the Clinton administration, in my opinion, they were negligent in taking charge of this matter and doing the right thing, as have many other administrations who bumped up against this and then backed off. Now, that's very different, and that's a matter of courage and what I call real leadership, the kind of leadership a man that I greatly admire, John McCain, speaks about, that kind of courage. Now, that's very different than empowering folks who are actively involved in promoting that agenda, an agenda that is harming the world and harming U.S. national security.
But they're all doing that. That's my point. My point is that none of them has done anything to help.
Well, it's one thing not to help. It's another thing to actively hurt. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's one thing if I'm a doctor and I pass a wreck on the road and I don't stop and help. That's terrible, of course, and I always stop personally. But it's another thing to actively cause the wreck. You see what I'm saying? So that's, and it's a significant difference. It's not an inconsequential thing. But ultimately, the people are going to have to learn who are involved, what corporations, what interest groups, and what agendas are operating in order to get their minds around how to fix the problem. And, you know, one of the things that has been a really frightening development that my friends who are in the conservative wing of the Republican Party, and I don't mean the religious right, but the old-fashioned conservative wing like Barry Goldwater, has been the hijacking of many of the agendas from folks who are really trying to push almost a theocracy.
Well,
I
think what you're trying to say, and you haven't said it yet, so I'm going to paraphrase you, is that this current president has surrounded himself with the wrong people.
Yes, and he's been ill-served. I said that earlier. He's been tragically ill-served.
I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, for example, with Halliburton, for example,
right,
where now the FBI is investigating allegations of a whistleblower because of all these atrocities that are going on. And so, and I don't want to dwell on the political end anymore, especially several days before a national election.
Right. But these are the kinds of issues that always come out when with the Halliburton thing. But, you know, this kind of corruption is endemic, unfortunately, in the system. And the system people have got to be aware. You asked earlier, why are so many of these military guys coming forward? And these are the one I just shared with you. He opened by saying, it is my patriotic duty to do this. These are good men and women who understand that the things that are happening are harming not only the world, but specifically the United States of America that they have risked their lives to serve. And I think that people have to be aware that there's an enormous amount at stake, and that unless we do change directions, we're going to end up further down this path that's quite disastrous.
Well, it's probably got to be more than just a change of direction, Stephen, because it's obvious that no administration, for example, is going to help support getting alternative energy. They can be saying this for years. I mean, I remember Jimmy Carter back in the 70s saying, you know, we've got to change all this. Nothing's happened. It's been 30 years.
Well, it was upended in the 80s. But the point is, see, here's the other point. Let's say that Kerry gets in there. I'm an equal opportunity, you know, let's put our feet to the fire. These are people who want to be our leaders. Let's demand that they lead. If Kerry gets in there and he stays on the same path and doesn't support serious research into the zero point area, into new propulsion systems, into energy efficiency and what have you, he should be thrown out of office. Absolutely. And I think that this is the issue. The American people have got to learn what the issues are and hold our national leaders to leading. And this hasn't happened, unfortunately, because there's this huge disconnect. I mean, you're never going to get this through the mainstream media, unfortunately, because I think the only thing more corrupt than Washington is the big media, unfortunately. But, and frankly, I think that's true. But I think that the American people need to understand that we have an urgent, if not emergent, situation with energy and the environment and many other issues that have been neglected by all sides, but have been the rate of damage has been compounded enormously in the last 4 years.
I think in terms of energy, and you will agree, what has happened in the energy field is abominable.
It's very corrupt.
Surrounded by greed. I mean, here we are in Iraq now controlling Iraqi oil fields.
Right.
And the price of oil is out of control.
And sitting in a black box at Lockheed Skunk Works, folks I know who've worked on them are energy and propulsion devices that could completely replace all oil, gas, and coal in the world. And our poor guys are over there dying. You know, a friend of Jeb Bush, who's supported what we're doing and is one of a financier kind of guy, told me in February of 2003, I think I shared this with Art Bell once, maybe off the air, I'm not sure. But in February of 2003, said, you know, we're not going to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And I was stunned. I said, what do you mean? I mean, that was conventional wisdom all sides of the aisle and internationally. He says, oh, no, that's not what this is about. We've got to free up the second largest proven oil reserve in the world, because with China industrializing and India industrializing at 10 and 15% a year, they're all in the commodities markets, and there's not going to be enough of it, and we're going to be looking at $60 and $100 a barrel oil. And I laughed, because at that time it was in the 20s. And he says, no, this is really what it's about. He says, but we can't say that.
Well, it wasn't just
what
that.
What a tragedy when we have the solution locked away in these
I agree, but it wasn't just that. It was a double whammy. I mean, there's no question we needed and wanted to take over those oil fields. And at the same time, by getting Saddam out, it was a double thing. You take care of two things, and that's what they did. Now, you know, back about a year and a half ago when you were on with me in January, you were talking about you were very close to finding the holy grail of alternative energy.
Well, we saw it demonstrated, that's for sure.
What happened to it? Where's the machine?
Well, first the guy, it's interesting, some corporate and legal people intercepted this guy the day before, 2 days before. We had a private jet fired up to go and retrieve him and the technology, which was offshore, and bring it back here. And they threatened to put him in jail and had all kinds of things if he didn't stop cooperating with us to get it out. It was the most mobbed up mess you've ever seen. I mean, you could write a whole book about it, but it's almost an archetype of the kind of crazy mess that has surrounded this whole new energy issue. I mean, anyone who's worked in this for any length of time, and you know my dear friend Gene Maloff.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. A murder that still has gone unsolved, I think.
Yes, sir. And, well, I'm almost reluctant to share this, you know, because I'm not sure.
You might as well. You've shared everything else.
Well, no, I haven't. Man, I haven't touched 10% of what I could tell you. We'd be here all night. Look, a man who has one of these devices very similar to the one that we saw offshore and that we're still working to get this inventor back to the United States to get it completed, working with us, had given the plans and had all the materials for it, and they were in Gene Maloff's vehicle when he was murdered, and when they secured the crime scene, those things were gone.
They're gone.
Now, I'm now working with this man. We're encouraging him to get these in multiple secure sites. Gene did not have the security around what he was doing that we have, and which I don't talk about in a lot of detail except to say it's extensive and it's an insider-type level of security. But it worried me when this man sent us this letter saying that that had happened. And, of course, his plans and what he's working on is very robust, in my opinion. We're hoping in the next 60 days that one will be completed and we'll be able to evaluate it. And there's a very exciting new development on the West Coast with a man who used to work in the Apollo project, not with my uncle, but knew of him, who had developed a means of collecting magnetic field sort of resonance. It's a type of over-unity process, and they already have a prototype built putting over 100 kilowatts of free energy out. And this is a very significant development. We hope in the next 30 days to do a site inspection and to assist in moving quickly this technology out, because this is the type of technology that could completely replace the power grid and eventually could be miniaturized for providing power for vehicles.
I got to tell you, Steve, there would be such a difference if we could just get away from relying on foreign oil.
Yes, if we could just save that much, we would be in a, we could say, you know, look, you guys, the sheik's over in the Middle East, you can have your oil.
Yep, just take it. Goodbye. You know, enjoy yourself and be done with it.
You bet. I think that this is, and everyone recognizes that this is a critical issue. You know, we're expanding, the CIA and some other operatives have been expanding our reach into Azerbaijan and some of the former Soviet republics, securing oil fields. They're working heavily to try to have a rapprochement with Libya, mainly because they need to get more of that oil off out to the market. And since we've sort of had that rapprochement, there's a thrust of big U.S. oil companies into Libya. Everyone knows this is a problem, and it's a crisis that is more severe than anyone is really acknowledging, because they don't want people to be, quote, afraid. But, you know, even the Saudi government this week said that the U.S. has been greatly exaggerating the extent to their of the Saudi oil reserves, and it is significantly less than we have been told. So this is something that, you know, we have 6 billion people on this planet who want to live like you and I do. You know, Dr. Bearden is a dear friend of mine, and I've talked about this. He says, you know, everyone wants to have cars and refrigerators.
And that's the problem. They're starting to catch up to where we were, let's say, 20, 30 years ago, and they're beginning to use resources that we never thought they'd be using, and now everybody on this planet is using it.
You know, I met with a man in Washington who is working. His business partner is the wealthiest man in China, and they are building 1,500 new villages. They are trying to figure out how to power them up without absolutely gobbling up all the commodities and causing a crisis. And so we had a long talk. He says, you know, as soon as you can identify something like this that is legitimate, he says, we need to know about it, because this is a desperate situation that is not just U.S., but it's a worldwide problem.
When we come back, Stephen, tell us how close we might be to a real zero-point energy machine and get it out there on the market. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Dr. Stephen Greer. Stephen, I think if Nikola Tesla were still alive, we might have this free energy somewhere out there.
Well, of course. When Nikola Tesla was alive, he had, I'm quite certain, one of these systems. And it was not allowed out then. You know, Dr. Bearden and I put together materials and all the way back to the 20s, literally, where people had enormously important electromagnetic system breakthroughs that could have, back then, replaced the need for oil and fossil fuels. But, of course, you can't meter it. And I think it was J.P. Morgan that said, well, I don't want anything you can't put a meter on and
charge.
So, you know, we have the world of our own creation, either by benign neglect or lack of courage or a lack of leadership or whatever it is, or just good old-fashioned human greed. But we're at the point now in our civilization's evolution that we're going to have to confront these issues. And unfortunately, we're the generation that's had this hot potato finally land in our lap, and we're going to have to deal with it.
If world economies hinge on, let's say, the source of income from energy, would we as a world still be prepared to pay money for it, maybe the same kind of money we're paying now, if it were just simply an alternative fuel? Or do you think it really should be almost free?
Well, it will be free in the sense that the device itself, for example, the ones that we have seen, like the one that we saw about a year and a half ago that got hijacked, that we're still trying to get back on track and back into this country, that was one that we literally could pick up, take out, put on a sidewalk, and operate It was running hundreds of watts of power from running real utilities such as fans and stereos and light bulbs, what have you. Now, obviously, there's no power to meter, but the device itself, of course, would sell for something. But the enormous multi-trillion-dollar supply line of fuel, as it were, or generated power that's been distributed from power plants, yes, that would become redundant and unnecessary. But I remind people that, computers have replaced typewriters, cars replaced horse and buggies. It is a big issue, but it's not insurmountable. I think that it's a matter of people deciding that this has to happen and wisely phasing it in. Unfortunately, now this is how I look at it. A lot of people say, God, the stuff you talk about is very futuristic. I said, no, it's not. This is stuff that should have been disclosed in the 50s when I was born. And in fact, we're about a half a century off the natural evolutionary trajectory that our civilization should have taken. And that's why we're now seeing so much damage in the environment, so much unrest in our civilization. And this kind of chaos and madness, if you will, is only going to get worse until we finally accept the fact that this kind of serious change has to be managed well, managed wisely, introduced compassionately, and done in a way that is as least disruptive as possible. But you see, the longer we wait, the less likely it will be that we can have an easy transition. I think at this point, the easy is gone. It's going to either be hard or catastrophic. And we have to choose if we want to fritter away more of our time as to whether we want it to end up being catastrophic. So the longer we wait, the more difficult it will be. And by the way, you've asked this question of why so many of these folks have come forward. They know that these covert projects, many of these military and corporate people, are sitting on these sorts of technologies. And I had one man who's old enough to be my father or grandfather say, this is what he said, I honestly thought this would have all been out to the public and disclosed in the 60s, and I looked at him.
And working, probably.
Yes, and as each decade went by, he became more and more appalled that we were still digging this big hole that we found ourselves in with the oil wars and everything else. So it is a serious issue, and it's not mythological that these technologies have existed. There's strong scientific documents and data related to it. And people have always said, well, how did you get from UFOs to energy? I said, well, one of the central reasons for the secrecy around UFOs is because the energy and propulsion systems behind them are obviously not using fossil fuels or nuclear power. They're using entirely new and revolutionary areas of physics that would create a rose garden of a world on this planet if we could use them peacefully. And see, this is where I think ultimately it is a serious spiritual crisis for humanity, because these technologies are going to have to be used peacefully, or they're going to be destructive like any other new technology. And yet, if we don't let them out, we're going to destroy ourselves with the current technologies. So we're in a situation where, one way or another, we as a people are going to have to decide to choose to live together in peace and put together the international means to have an enforceable peace. Unfortunately, I think for some time it's going to be the peace of chained dogs.
Well, what's going
to
happen?
So much of humanity wants to rip each other's throats out over the most silly things.
It's going to be a worldwide calamity that gets us all back together. That's the sad part. Today,
humans don't learn too easily, do they?
I'm not a proponent in vaccines. I've gotten some emails from people who say, if a friend of mine dies because of what you've said about a vaccine, I'm going to come get you. And I keep saying, wait a minute, I haven't told one person not to get a shot.
Right.
Not one. I tell people I don't get one.
Right.
I don't get a flu shot, and you can't get one now anyway if you want
it. Right, if you wanted it.
But
yeah.
they said today, some experts said that they project 1 billion people on this planet could die because of the flu. And I'm looking at that and saying, that's 1/6 of the world's population.
Right.
That can't be. There's got to be some sinister force out there that wants to remove 1 billion people from this planet, because I can't see the flu doing it. I don't believe it.
Well, the number I've actually heard is 4 billion. And this gets into some things that most people don't want us to go into.
Now, let's stick to energy and UFOs.
Okay, but the fact is that, there are folks who have agendas that are really crazy. I mean, they're sort of end-of-the-world, eschatological, kooky things. And there are some people who feel like, gee, you know, unless we have something like that happen, we won't have Christ return on a flying saucer or whatever it is. So the problem is that there is a nexus of misperceptions and, if you can use the word ignorance or what have you, and superstitions that have gotten us into the current situation. It's only going to be through a degree of knowledge and enlightenment and reason and genuine, in my opinion, genuine spirituality as opposed to religiosity, because what I have found is that there's an inverse relationship between religiosity and spirituality, unfortunately.
Do you believe in end times?
Well, I think that, you know, every day is an end time. I mean, I think we are in a cycle. Here's what I think. I think that we're at the end of a very long cycle in human evolution and an opening of another. So when people say, oh, it's the end of the world, well, it's the end of one era of our civilization and the opening of another whole period.
I believe that. I agree with that.
And that's where we are, and we're at this critical sort of fulcrum, this point where it's all tipping. And we have to, as it were, sort of be midwives, if you will, of this sort of new baby that's coming forward, which I think is going to be a civilization, as I see it, that will exist for hundreds of thousands of years peacefully, and that we really will go out into space and we will become a truly enlightened people on this planet over the next thousands of years. But we're also the generation that are the custodians of sort of putting to bed this old time that's gasping and trying to die. So we have to do both with compassion. And I know I'm using some medical analogies here, but I'm a doctor. What can I do? But I think that we have to look at it that way, and we have to, with wisdom and some compassion and love, see how to let the one go out as quietly as possible. It's not going to be too quiet, but also not take our eye off the ball. You know, with all the stuff that people talk about that's very fearsome and all the horrible things going on, what I see, and this is the vision I see, are technologies and knowledge coming together where this earth really could be so beautiful, where there would be no want and poverty and no pollution and a sustainable civilization that could stretch thousands of years into the future and go out into space with these technologies. You know, Ben Rich, the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, told us before he died that we already had locked away in super secret projects at Lockheed technologies that would take us amongst the stars faster than the speed of light. But he said, you know, it would take an act of God to bring them out to benefit humanity. And he said it with great sadness. So what I see is that eventually will happen. And we're the generation that at the one hand are kind of have one foot in this old time that's sort of dying. You can call it the end time in that sense. But also we have a foot and our vision is stretching over to this other time that's really we're moving towards very quickly. And it's really unfolding like a flower all around us in many, many ways. So I have a very long-term optimistic view of this. But I also am not Pollyanna about it. I think people have to pull together, work together, and try to make this happen because it isn't going to happen magically. It's going to happen by people doing the hard work together.
Well, you know, before you fix the road, you're going to lose some tires in those potholes.
And, yeah, that's right.
And that's
and
what's going to happen to us.
We've lost some tires, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think there's many more to occur with that.
Very much so.
You know, people are concerned really about a couple things, Stephen, when it comes to energy, and that is their homes and their cars, and both of which, to me, would seem to be very easy to fix. I mean, I think we can go to some alternative fuel for a car. They're just holding back on that. And I also see the day, I hope, where every home will have its own self-contained unit, don't you?
Well, the ones that we have seen literally could do that. In fact, now the one that we're going to be pursuing very quickly here that's putting out over 100 kilowatts is too large for a home. But it could be scaled down so you could have a home-sized unit so that every home would have its own power source. You wouldn't have transmission lines that are so ugly.
Where would you put it? In the back of the house or something like that? Outside?
The system is different. This particular system could actually be in your basement and wouldn't have to be connected to the outdoor environment at all. You know, it's really quite robust. Others that I've seen would have to be somehow connected to the outdoors. They're different types, but the solutions are there and they're coming. SEAS, inventionpower.com is our corporate website. And I encourage anyone who's an inventor out there who believes they have a significant breakthrough to contact us, because I will do everything in my power once we test and replicate a system and prove that it's legitimate to bring it out. And, you know, people say, well, won't you be threatened? I said, well, I've been threatened for 14 years. And I said, they're going to have to take me out in a coffin, quite frankly, to get me to stop doing what I'm doing. But, and I mean that, and everyone who knows me knows I'm sincere in that regard. So anyone who has this should approach us through the corporate website, which is seaspower.com. But, you know, the car and the propulsion systems for cars, you can have power packs based on these same type of technologies that will be quite adequate, where, forget a replacement fuel, you won't have any fuel at all, and it will run the car.
Well, what works on? Is it like a magnet, or what happens?
Basically, well, there are various approaches, you know, and if you look at, you know, Dr. Bearden is so brilliant. He has a book out that came out last year that's about 1,000 pages called Energy from the Vacuum. I highly recommend it to people who want to get into this seriously. But there are some 18 or 19 different ways to extract this free energy from the quantum vacuum or zero-point energy field that have happened over the years. Unfortunately, most of those systems either get confiscated, they're lost to posterity, the inventors are either assassinated or threatened.
Are they bought off in some cases?
Most of them are bought off. I mean, I have spoken to a man, I have a witness who had his whole career with Bell Labs. And he said that while he was there, there were 28 or 29 of these really advanced systems from just civilian inventors that his corporation had bought up and put on a black shelf.
Just give them a check and they're done.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, this has been going on for a long time. And if they are approached and told, sort of hinted at the sort of reprisals and threats if they don't cooperate, and the enormous wealth they'll have if they agree to sell out and let it be shelved. Now, what I'm telling inventors is that don't do that.
That's tempting for them, isn't it?
Of course it's tempting, and I know guys who have done it, quite frankly. Personally know guys who have done it. You know, now what I've said to people is that, you know, if someone offered me $100 billion, I'd show them the door and say, I'm not interested. We're interested in getting this information.
Oh, you wouldn't take a check for $100 billion, Stephen?
No, I would not.
You're one of the last ones, then.
I absolutely would not.
I wonder how many people.
Voice analyzer on my.
Let's put the voice analyzer on you.
Absolutely not. Hook me up to a lie detector. No amount of money and no amount of threats. And you know, I told a major news anchor with one of the big networks when I was talking to him about that. He says, you know, if you get one of these and it's been vetted by some of your university contacts, I'll have you on the show. And he says, but you know, you might. You know, the government might hit you with one of these orders, national security orders, saying don't do it. And I said, oh, yeah? Well, be prepared for me to tear it up in front of however many million people you get watching the show. I will tear it up.
What will it take to get to really get this alternative energy up and running in homes, in cars, ready to go?
Well, I think there's a whole nexus of problems. First of all, you have to have a legitimate system that is built that hasn't disappeared or been what I call the Humpty Dumpty syndrome, where it's fallen apart and you can't get it. So once we find one like that where the inventor is willing to go the distance and cooperate, or at least hand it off and get it out to the public, the first thing we have to do is get it scientifically replicated at multiple settings where it's proven, where the scientific and the financial and the mass media understand that this is not a hoax or snake oil. You've got to do your due diligence. You've got to be scientific. Once that's done, our intention is to do a massive disclosure of the technology. I mean, that would make the disclosure project of 2001 look like a rounding error, and we will do that. And so the public knows it exists, and then put it into a rapid R&D cycle to get it perfected and out to the public. I'm working with a company now that has done very high-tech and quick turnarounds, where within 6 to 9 months they can take a prototype and get it to where it's being churned out by the thousands or even millions of units. So this is doable, but you first have to have a legitimate system, get the bugs out of it, get it independently vetted and reproducible so that there's no question that it's legitimate, and then you can move it over into these stages where it's out to the public. But long before they would be sold to the public, we would want to have the public informed. I mean, if I'm welcome back on this show, I'd come back on your show having already had you come out and seen it operate yourself. I'd get on ABC, I'd get whatever, and say, look, the people need to know there is light at the end of the tunnel, and here's the proof of it. So far, we have not gotten anything that I feel is robust enough to put out in front of the mass public in that way. But we think it is not that far off. There are some very promising technologies we're looking at this fall, and I'm cautiously optimistic that that'll happen. I would like to that it happened already, but I can't control all those things. There are a lot of things that have interfered with that progress. But ultimately, I think the strongest way to make sure these technologies are known is, once you have them secured and replicated in safe places, is to have millions and millions of people around the world know it exists, because the government at that point, or these covert groups, will not be able to suppress it. Once people know it exists, they're going to want to have it.
Absolutely.
In the marketplace. You know what? Alan Greenspan's right-hand economist told me back a few years ago when we were talking about this. That she said, you know, Dr. Greer, the market will take care of it. If you can get it out there and get it proven, it will simply go
sure.
at that point. But, you know, getting to that point is difficult. Usually these systems get intercepted before they get mass public awareness around them. And so what we want to do is quickly go from its identification, verification scientifically, to massive public awareness. And, you know, your listeners, I think, would be key in doing that, because with the Internet and radio and other things, the information can circle the globe very quickly.
How did disclosure evolve from the UFO cover-up to zero-point energy and energy? How did that transition occur?
I was following the new energy area because it involves, of course, the UFO issue. And when 9/11 happened, I made a phone call to, of course, my wife and to my daughter, who was in D.C., to try to get her out of the city. And the third call was to my military advisor and my science advisor. And I basically talked to them. I said, you know what? This is the sign. We're going to have to move into the energy area, because that's what this is all about.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that it's sort of a chilling thing, but that's literally the conversation I had on 9/11. And within a month, we had formed SeizePower.com, and we have been, and of course, looking diligently in testing systems since then, because we knew that the secrecy behind the UFOs was largely, not totally, I mean, there were religious and other reasons, but largely centered around economics and geopolitical power and energy. And that we had just gone too far down the path of keeping these things secret. And our group said, look, now we've got to move into this direction.
All right, stay with us, Stephen. We're going to come right back for one more hour. We'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to talk with Dr. Stephen Greer. And also, one thing I want to ask you, Stephen, when we come back, because you might know, so many people are reporting seeing this huge triangular-shaped object. They're all over the place. Many of them are near military bases. I want to get your take on that. I've never been able to ask you that. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with you and Dr. Stephen Greer right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Stephen Greer. Stephen, a question I've always wanted to ask you. So many people call this program at Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center about these huge triangular-shaped objects that they seem to see.
Right.
Obviously, there's something, but what are they? I do not know. Do you get reports from some of the people in the Disclosure Project what they might be?
Yes, there are actually several categories of those. There are a number of human-made prototypes that are very advanced, electrogravitic, anti-gravity, if you will, propulsion systems, and they've been up being tested for many, many years. That are triangular in shape or delta sort of in shape. Some are chevrons. There are also extraterrestrial vehicles that are similar. Of course, that's where they got the idea from them, and that also have a similar shape. As you know, we have gone on expeditions all over the world to the volcano down near Mexico City, I think southeast of Mexico City, Popocatépetl, and also around Belgium and the eastern part of Belgium there near Opin, where there are many of these huge triangular objects were seen. And we sent our own team there. I was head of them, this team, and went there and had rather close encounters with them. In fact, were able to signal with them with lights for up to 20 minutes at one point, where they were circling over just a few thousand feet from us, and not very high, large, about 3 football fields on each side of this enormous triangle, and obviously under intelligent control. So we've had some extraordinary close encounters with those objects, and actually there's some excellent accounts of that. There's a book The first book we put out was called Extraterrestrial Contact, The Evidence and Implications, and people can get that at disclosureproject.org, where we go through the kind of craft that we've encountered, and they run the gamut from these enormous triangular objects to very small probes that are the size of a basketball that have flown right into our research groups and zipped back out to traditionally sort of spherical and disc-shaped objects. So I think that people have to keep in mind that anything that's been observed that's an unusual phenomenon like this, mm-hmm. and that's of extraterrestrial origin, that our aerospace, a very classified corporate and military projects have worked at replicating the airform, if you will,
sure.
shape, as well as the propulsion systems. Now, of course, I mean, I think the one is much more advanced than the other. The extraterrestrial vehicles are much more advanced. But my understanding is that there have been such enormous breakthroughs since the 40s and 50s when those projects started up to today that some of the technologies that we have in these classified projects really do look like things out of Star Trek or what have you. And it is a very serious R&D effort that's been going on. Of course, I tell people our tax dollars hard at work. At some point, I do hope that we get some benefits.
Yeah, they are hard at work, but we don't know what they're doing.
Right, exactly. Back in 94, when I was meeting with folks at the Senate Appropriations Committee, they said upwards of $100 billion a year back then was going into these sort of illegal and unaccountable shadowy projects with all the creative accounting. And I was astonished at that number. And this was, of course, this man I mentioned before who had a subpoena power and top-secret clearance. And he says, we just can't control it. He says, it's hidden in so many places. There's so much what have you going on. And there's so many issues that folks up there on the Hill are dealing with that these things that just go on and on and on. It's like the Energizer Bunny. No one really has a good handle on it, and it just is off and running.
Good point. To the phones we go. You ready, Stephen?
Yes, sure.
Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast with Dr. Stephen Greer. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the program.
Thanks, George. I want to say hi to you. I've really been enjoying your show the last couple of months. A friend of mine in Indiana turned me on to it. And within 10 days, I couldn't believe that you actually brought up the black triangles. And just this summer, I remembered that I had seen one in 1996 in Michigan, and I don't know what was stranger, seeing it or the fact that I didn't think about it for 7 years.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been around for at least that long. I remember, Stephen, some police officers in Millstadt, Illinois, right around that time period also witnessed it, but that was near Scott Air Force Base. So here again, they're near military bases.
Right, but at the same time, there's a large number of reports in areas that aren't near military bases and are centered around unstable seismic areas where there's a lot of volcanic activity. We have found that, in fact, around the Pacific Ring of Fire, wherever there have been significant eruptions of volcanoes, and we reported this back in the early 90s, that there have been very serious and well-documented sightings of a variety of these craft, including the large triangular ones, that appear to be monitoring and looking into whatever it is that they're concerned about regarding the instability around the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Ring of Fire, or the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire, where all the volcanoes
mm-hmm.
and seismic areas there. And this has been reported all over the world, and not just around the Pacific Basin, but also in Europe and other places.
But they're huge. I mean, they're absolutely huge.
Yes, and what's interesting, the ones that we encountered in Belgium, one of them came over us at Henri-Chapelle, down out of a cloud, and just one corner of it that dipped down was so enormous, and a light that was at the one end of it looked as it was larger than a full moon, as if it was descending on us. And some of the gendarmes that we interviewed and spoke with said that one of these objects was over a little town near Henri-Chapelle in eastern Belgium, and it was hovering right above the town steeple. And at one point, they left this out of the official reports because they were afraid of being ridiculed. This enormous object that was 3 football fields long on each side of it, of this enormous triangle, very silent, maybe a slight transformer humming sound, which is what I've heard from them. suddenly collapsed into what looked like a red pulsing ball, a plasma-like ball of energy, and then shot straight up out into space. And I have heard that report, and we have, our groups have seen this sort of phenomenon before, where you have something like, well, what has happened to it? It has shifted, what, out of dimension or into some other energy form? Here is this massive structured craft that suddenly appears to just collapse into this pulsing point of energy and then flies out into space. So that's the sort, you know, these things are so fascinating. And by the way, this is how I really got hooked on this whole thing, because when I was a child, as I mentioned, when I was 8 or 9 years old, I saw one of these objects in broad daylight. It was more of a disc-shaped object silently hovering, and some boys and I in the neighborhood saw it. Of course, my family said, oh, yes, well, it's the imagination of a little boy, but it stuck with me. And so this caller, many people have seen these objects, and you never forget it when you've seen one, particularly if it's been fairly close.
I think Art and Ramona saw one of the big ones, right?
Yes.
Yep. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jenny.
Hi, Jenny. Where are you?
I'm calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania at a truck stop. We just pulled off the fuel island.
Well, welcome to the program, and go ahead. The stage is yours.
Okay, I have a question. I have been following Stephen Greer's and Michael Tesseri and David Icke's work.
Okay.
And, I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, and my question is, okay, first let me say a comment. I understand that what they're saying is that the reptilian aliens are the ones kind of controlling some of the secret societies which are trying to bring forth this new world order.
Well, that's definitely what David Icke believes, for example.
Yeah, I don't think that's the case at all, but anyway, go ahead.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Well, then I misunderstood. But my question was, if there is some kind of negative alien force behind some of the things that are going on that are a little more shady, I was just curious why. What would motivate the aliens to want to bring forth like a one world government, new world order type thing? I can understand humans, you know, motives, but what would the aliens gain from that? Why are they doing it?
Well, of course, she's asking me this question, so I have to answer it in with the statement that the question is based on facts, not in evidence.
Right.
And my own assessment of this is as follows. There's a lot of mythology around this subject. I personally don't see that there's any evidence at all that there's some sort of a group of extraterrestrial life forms that are calling the shots at all. Now, we have had interaction with various extraterrestrial civilizations, and to my understanding from people I have on the inside, there are several dozen, maybe upwards of up in the 50 to 70 range of different star systems with people that have been documented over the decades. However, I think that they're more concerned with our own ability to cause trouble, not only here but out in space, as we develop the ability to go out in space with weapons. There's no evidence, in my opinion, that there's a hostile intent in the least from these civilizations, and if that were so, we would have known about it a long time ago. Now, there are reports of different strange-looking creatures, and I'm going to step into an area here that sounds really science fiction, but I can't ignore it because I have multiple different corroborating people who've worked in facilities where this stuff's going on, where we have engaged in really extraordinary genetic experiments and have come up with things that are called PLFs, and this is a program life form. And a program life form is a human-created thing that looks alien because it's really quite bizarre, but is not extraterrestrial. Now, people look and they go, well, this is what was going on in the Four Corners area around Dulce. There's a facility that's underground in England that I have a couple of people who've worked in who have recounted this, and they have seen these sort of creatures, but they are not of extraterrestrial origin. They're of human manufacture. Now, if you can imagine what's gone on covertly from the 40s to today in the area of anti-gravity and energy generation and the ability to electronically, quote, dematerialize and rematerialize objects, all this has been going on in the human domain. The similar level of technology advancement has occurred in the biological and genetic area. Don't think that whatever was Dolly the sheep was the first thing we ever cloned or experimented with. So there have been extraordinary projects going on within these same sort of mad scientist covert programs dealing with this stuff. And it has been used to give people the impression that those things are, quote, aliens. Now, the whole thing gets very complex, because what I believe is that the majority of what people have been told and maybe have seen is really a human-created smokescreen, a sort of a... It's like the Wizard of Oz with the old man behind the curtain pulling all the strings and all this.
Yep.
I think there's a big Wizard of Oz phenomenon going on. And so in a sense, I guess I'm a terrible skeptic about a lot of the theories and ideas that are out there, because the folks I have dealt with personally have indicated that there is an enormous capability within these classified projects to, quote, hoax an alien presence when it's actually man-made, et cetera, and so on. And I think that we have to be very careful, therefore, about what kind of elaborate, sort of ideas we get, because I think there are people who would like us to believe that there's a threat from outer space, because, you know, look, the $1 trillion a year military expenditure going on the planet today in 2004 could be grown to $2 or $3 or $4 trillion a year or more if we could stampede the Earth's people into thinking there's a threat out there that we need to fight. So I'm very, very conservative about those kinds of ideas, simply because I think there's too many suspicious characters who would benefit from that kind of fear-mongering and what have you. So personally, I don't think that's happening at all. Now, there are people with agendas for a type of a new order in the world that's very dominant and militaristic. My own view is that we do need a new order in the world, but it's not that order. Do we need a new world order? Yeah, but not the one that is sort of dominated that way. But the whole question about whether there's some sort of an extraterrestrial presence that's forcing this agenda, I'm rather skeptical of. My own experience with the phenomenon and with, in fact, the ETs is that they're really waiting for us to grow up and begin to live in a civilized fashion on this Earth. And I think at that point, we would be welcome out in space with open arms. I think up until then, we're going to be contained. I have a guy at the who was with the National Security Agency who told me, you know, we've been tossed back like a bad penny a few times and have had some of our satellite systems shut down because we have tried to put weapon systems out in space and, in fact, have targeted some of these extraterrestrial vehicles with them. And so until we learn to treat things we don't understand with a little more respect and without being so quick to shoot first and ask questions later, I think that we're going to be sort of viewed as a potential wild card, if you will, out there in the universe. And I think just as human civilization has tried to contain certain rogue elements that have gotten out of control, I think that at this point we're being watched to be sure that we don't get out of control. Because if you were to look at the course of the human race over the last 100 years, to go from horse and buggies to space travel with these enormously powerful technologies, and yet we're still murdering each other and fighting over the craziest things. I lived in the Middle East, by the way, for 3 years, where, you know, people who are blood brothers are murdering each other, and they basically all believe in the same God. So, you know, sit down and be happy. But the fact is that kind of consciousness of division and us versus them is exploited, I believe, by people who benefit from the machinery of war. We have to be very careful of that, and that's why I think a lot of these ideas that get put out there are being seeded into our subculture and our awareness for the purpose of eventually rolling out a false threat from outer space to try to unite human civilization and to also aggrandize the usual suspects in the corporate military-industrial complex.
You know, Stephen, if we were genetically altered, something went wrong because, you know...
a work in progress, yes.
I mean, what a planet where they just constantly kill and kill and kill. I mean, we had 16,000 murders in this country last year.
Right. I'm an emergency doctor in the hospital. I was in North Carolina. We were in the county with the highest murder rate in the state, so... it was no picnic.
That's another show all by itself, isn't it?
Oh, my God, I could tell you that. Oh, yes,
my.
Indeed.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
I'd like to ask him if he thinks we'll be visited by ETs in large numbers in the future.
Ah, almost like Independence Day, Stephen. Could that happen?
Well, I actually see it in another way, not like Independence Day in sort of an invasion sort of scenario, but I do believe there are several scenarios. If you read the paper I did in 1991 called The Comprehensive Assessment of the UFO and ET Issue. And this paper actually got passed around all through all the aerospace industry and the CIA. That's kind of how I got pushed into that arena. And, and this is in the first book that I mentioned, Extraterrestrial Contact, that you can get at the website, disclosureproject.org. And in that, what became very clear to us when we started analyzing this back in the early 90s is that that scenario could happen under a few conditions. Number one, if there was a serious geophysical collapse, some sort of enormous earth change or something that happened, I believe we'll see it. If there was a thermonuclear war that was so serious and such a large launch that it would threaten the viability of Earth as a biosphere for the evolution of higher intelligent life forms, my understanding is that there would be a massive interception and that that would be stopped. Now, after I made that assessment, I found out from people who had been with the Atomic Energy Commission and in the military that, in fact, when we went very close to a DEFCON level of that situation, there were a few close calls back during the Cold War, that, in fact, there were events that happened that demonstrated to our national military command structure that these extraterrestrial vehicles could shut down the ability to launch large numbers of intercontinental ballistic missiles. So I think there are very few situations where you'd see this kind of large-scale intervention. One would be an enormously either man-made or natural catastrophe, which, of course, may be part and parcel of the same thing if we end up melting both our polar ice caps and putting the whole world's equilibrium further out of balance, or if there was a massive man-made war that would be very destructive. I think that my own opinion about this, and this is my assessment from studying this for most of my life, is that none of these extraterrestrial civilizations are hostile. They're concerned about our hostility and our ability to be incredibly self-destructive, and yet they view humanity as having great promise and the Earth as having great promise, and yes, they may have had an ancient connection to the Earth and to the human race.
Well, I wish they would step in and bail us out sometime, Stephen. We'll be back with you in a minute. Stephen Greer, can you react at all? Do you have any input into the Dan Burrish story, which is bizarre as it comes? His mother called us last week, and she's concerned, claiming that she hasn't heard from him in a long, long time. Are you familiar at all, Stephen, with this case?
Not that well. Not well enough to really comment on it.
Okay. Okay. Let's go back to the calls. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. You're on with Dr. Stephen Greer. Hi there. Hello? Going once?
Just a second. I think my phone just ran out of...
Okay, well, because you've been waiting so long, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt here.
Okay.
Are you okay?
I got a landline here.
Okay. Live radio.
I was listening, I guess it was 2 months ago now, to your guest. I got the name down as Dr. Roger Lear.
Yeah.
He claimed to have artifacts from UFOs, and when he was describing them, he said one sentence that really hit me. The isotopic distribution was extraordinary. Well, I have found that same sentence in a book I want to tell you about. Nuclear Transmutation, The Reality of Cold Fusion by Tadahiko Mizuno.
Right. I'm familiar
now,
with it.
Mizuno and his colleagues were doing some experiments with a gold cathode inside the glass thing, passing electricity through the anode and the cathode.
Right.
And the gold cathode turned black. And the stuff that was black fell to the bottom of the cell. The stuff was iron. That's what it is. Now, iron comes in four different masses. Iron 56 amounts to 91.72% of the sample, and you'll find the same amount, the same percentage, in iron taken from any place on Earth.
So, what's your point, though, sir?
Well, the iron that he got as a result of this electrolysis, the iron 57 was only 2%, but it was 45% was iron 56, usually
92%. I know, but you're losing me. What's your point?
This is a result of electrolysis causing nuclear reaction.
Right, and what you were really talking about, I mean, if I can comment on this.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
There are a number of technologies that have been around for quite some time, and not just extraterrestrial. But one of the problems with people saying, I have something that's from outer space or extraterrestrial, you can't make that assessment unless you know what the deep covert capabilities are. Now, we know that there have been technologies using plasma-type energies that have been able to alter nuclear structure, and literally, I mean, it sounds mythological, transmutation of the elements have occurred. In fact, I'm working with an inventor now who does not want us to talk about this at all, so I can't even describe the type of system he has, but in his process, he is getting elements that were not there from the intake material because of this same kind of effect. So that is something that does occur with these sort of, quote, new energy type physics. And it's not surprising, of course, that people have come across that in these new energy areas, but also certainly anything that would be UFO-related, whether it's a man-made propulsion and energy system or one that's actually from outer space. But that is a phenomenon that's been reported in a number of places in which we have personally, I have personally seen a reactor, not a nuclear reactor, by the way, that does cause that to happen in the course of its process. And so I think that it is understood how it happens. It's a rather esoteric area of nuclear physics, but it does occur, as does the, quote, cold fusion phenomenon occur.
Okay, East of the Rockies, you're on with Dr. Stephen Greer. Your turn. Hi.
Hey there. There's so much covered here. I wrote down a list of four to five or six things, and I just have to comment on your work in digress. You know, you said work in progress, work in digress, which leads us maybe to turning gold into iron, does it not? Can I just run through these things, and then I'll get to maybe the meat of it?
Really quickly.
Yes.
Because there are lots of people.
It's whatever you want to do, whether you want to do this thing of Yucca Valley, the Tesla circular building up there, the military-industrial complex, the Mother Nature, Father Time, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, ending of Project Blue Book, leading to the attention to the crop circles and all kind of things. I put a star by here, and this is just a layman ignorant, not stupid, but ignorant layman's thing about, oh, I don't know if I need an astrophysicist or a space travel thing, but let's just say the way the tank treads move a tank along the ground in their oblong, you know, circular tire.
Sure.
Let's just say the way that electricity moves, moving the electron from, what is it, from molecule to molecule, the outer or the atom, the outer circle of the atom or and or molecule. What if, you know, an adequate quantity in bursts of these electrons from, you know, could just be forward, you know, shot forward, and we could move through space on a on an astro tank tread, if you will, as in a treadmill in space, and then it would just turn under and be you know, those electrons replaced with the oncoming lacking atoms, molecules, and it's just a far out concept without any basis of knowledge, but yet, you know, what if?
Well, actually, what's happening with actual travel, with space travel, are systems that, through very advanced physics and resonance frequency, causes a quantum shift across the light barrier. And basically, if you see me, you see a car driving around that has XINGPT on it, crossing point, that's my car. And it refers to everything resonating beyond the velocity of light. But you don't go through the light barrier incrementally, and you're not going to travel through space with the electrons or ions because it's at the speed of light or below. It's just too slow. These systems actually allow for an entire craft or an object to alter its form. And some would say this is interdimensional. In a sense, that's true and false, but we don't have time to go into that. But where it shifts over into a phase or a form of energy that's closer to what used to be called the etheric. It is no longer, quote, solid in a three-dimensional way. It has shifted totally in the way it is functioning in a quantum way. Interestingly, I have a witness. If you look at the Disclosure book, it's just called Disclosure, and you can get it on our website, disclosureproject.org. One of the military guys who was at the Toronto Air Station back in the 50s personally was at an experiment where through this type of electronics, they took a solid object, I believe it was a glass ashtray, if I remember correctly, dematerialized it. It sounds like right out of Star Trek, and rematerialized it in another room and did this back and forth with electronics that they had figured out in 1953, before I was born. So what people need to understand is that that is real. That is not a fictitious or fanciful. So the means to do this, and of course, many people would say, well, you know, gee, well, if we have that, why are we still driving around with cars? Well, this gets into the whole discussion of what we were before about how things are controlled and metered and what have you. But in terms of what is physically possible and what's been scientifically done, this type of phenomenon allows for an object to literally, quote, dematerialize and then rematerialize. Well, where is it between one point in space and another? It's in a form. You guys were talking about ghosts earlier in your lead-in.
Yeah.
It's in a form that closely approximates what the mystics used to call astral or etheric energy, but it's scientific. And so these craft, like that huge triangle in Belgium that collapsed into this sort of plasma-like light and then just vanished off into space, you're dealing with a physics that, you know, ain't your granddad's Oldsmobile, and it certainly isn't just electrons or things that are going at the speed of light or anything subluminal. These are things that go beyond this crossing point of light where the entire sort of curvilinear universe is altered, and you get into what I call a non-local universe. By the way, this is also why UFO phenomena and extraterrestrial technologies interface so seamlessly with consciousness, the dream state, and I'll tell you something that I found from an insider. Dreamland, this area out at the Nellis Range out in Area 51, was named that because the technologies they're playing around with that calls you, if you're in one of these devices, to be in a form where you feel like you're having one of these out-of-body experiences or a lucid dream, which is really sort of an etheric or astral body activation when you have these lucid, clear dreams. So these technologies cross over into areas that have usually been relegated into the realm of the mystic or the mythological, but in actuality, it's a very specific science, and that's what we're talking about when we talk about superluminal or faster than the speed of light, extraterrestrial or human experimental technology.
You know, they shut Tesla down too, didn't they?
Of course.
Yep.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt he was murdered, and most of his really sensitive papers, I understand from insiders, were confiscated.
They raided his office and his home.
Yeah. And they were never fully returned, because I have dealt with people who were involved with that, actually, and way back. And, apparently the really key information that he had developed and which had been suppressed during his lifetime was confiscated and was never seen again.
Sad. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on with us. Hi there.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We are well. Go ahead.
Great. Two things. I have seen one of them big, huge triangle UFOs about 6 years ago on South Beach in Miami.
On South Beach?
Yeah. Have you ever been to South Beach?
Oh, lots.
Oh, yeah, I go there all the time. I'm a party animal. Are you kidding? Fun.
Okay. I don't drink. I don't do drugs. I don't do none of that stuff.
Oh, I don't either, but you still have a good time, yeah.
Yeah, I've had a great time.
I'm telling you, I'm the wildest guy you'll ever meet if you ever go out with me, but that's another discussion.
Right.
That's another lie detector test, Stephen. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I'm hanging out with this girl, so I had a witness, and we're there talking, getting to know each other. And if you look up, you can't see too many stars because of the city lights and such, but we could see some stars. And from the left to the right, this thing flew across the sky, and it had a blur around it, like on the television, how they blur out profanity.
Right.
This blur was around this triangle.
Right.
And if a commercial jet flies at 30,000 feet going from Canada to Mexico, it's pretty high. This thing was twice as high as that and just huge. And I point and I say, oh, my God. And she says, look at that. And we both saw it. And she's like, you were in the Navy. What was that? And I'm like, I have no idea.
Right.
So yeah, I have seen that.
Yeah, no, these have been reported actually down in that area. And I have a friend who's in Santa Barbara who has actually filmed a number of them moving along the channel, the Santa Barbara Channel out there in the Pacific. We have been out on expeditions where a non-illuminated craft, like you're describing, as it moves over, simply is darker than the sky, actually, and blackens out the sky as it moves across. And I have a witness, one of our aircraft witnesses, who's actually a commercial 747 pilot, who encountered one of these also out in the, all over the Atlantic, but it was further south towards Brazil, moving at enormous speed, and actually went underneath the jet and lifted the 747 up just briefly, sort of like a little hiccup as you're going along. And this is a very serious case involving a senior 747 captain for a major airline. So yeah, those have been seen, and they can be enormous and move at tremendous velocities and make all kinds of right-hand turns and what have you. At thousands of miles per hour. I'll also point out that when they're right at the point that is at this, what I call crossing point phenomenon, where it's not quite, you know, here but not quite there either in terms of its resonance, they take on a plasma and etheric quality, and the edges of them do become very blurry and quite amorphous, almost mirage-like. And I know that Colonel Corso described that in one of the craft that he saw out there at Holloman Air Force Base, where, in fact, it would be solid and then it would disappear, and there would just almost be like a heat wave distortion in the air in the space around where it was, and then it would rematerialize again. So, you know, you're dealing with technologies that do these sort of things, and it's really quite fascinating. But I don't pretend to understand all the physics. I, like I said, I'm a country doctor here in Virginia, and I certainly don't have a physics degree, but I have guys I'm working with who do understand this and have explained it to me so I can at least articulate it in layman's term, but I'm not the expert on the physics behind these things.
Stephen, if you were to get one wish granted, and albeit finding that alternative energy or zero-point source or getting full government disclosure, for example, on UFOs and ETs, which of the two would you pick?
Either one will do, and I'll tell you why. And people have asked me this for years because they can't quite figure out how enigmatically I've moved between these two areas. If there is a honest disclosure of the UFO issue, that will have to entail the coming out of people who know about the physics behind the propulsion systems, and everyone's going to then say, well, what do we know about it? And when that's asked, honestly, it will be answered, and when that's answered, we'll have the new energy thing.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we can find an energy system, and I was meeting with a member of the House National Security Committee last summer, and he said, you know, if you can get a human inventor who understands this, it would prove the physics and the energy access systems, as it were, what I call my company, Space Energy Access Systems, that would prove then the physics behind these enigmatic aerial phenomena called UFOs and what have you. So the one will lead to the other, you see. But at this point, we critically need not only disclosure of the truth on the UFO issue and a coming clean of these very rogue and illegal cabals that are running the system into the ground, but we've got to bring the actual physical sciences out. We need to start that process. Because remember, if we identify, and I hope someone out there listening is a serious inventor that has something that they can share with us to try to get out to the public before it's too late. But if we can do that, it will cause many things to be empowered, including the disclosure of the UFO matter. So the one will help the other, and at this point I'd be happy with either, but I see ourselves as a civilization in critical need of serious solutions for energy generation, the geopolitical situation, and the environment. And so it's a very practical issue, and that's why, as I mentioned, after 9/11, we shifted our focus, not exclusively by any means, but heavily towards identifying these types of energy systems.
I'll tell you what, you may find that individual inventor, Stephen, who develops a small unit, let's say, for one's house, and then without any backing, he probably will be able to start selling these to homes, and all of a sudden, it'll be hopefully too late to stop him.
Well, that's what we want to help somebody do, because we have a team of really wonderful people, not only scientists, but people in many circles. I mean, I was meeting with a member of Congress earlier this year for a couple hours, and I think that what we can do is open the door to not only the public, but to the friendly people in in our government. Don't think at all that the government are all a bunch of bad guys. 99.9% of people just trying to do their job. They're not involved in these kind of secret projects, and they would love to see this kind of solution. And we have built bridges to all those good people who are out there, and that's what we want to do, is bring these technologies across that bridge and get the support they deserve.
Very good. It's Dr. Stephen Greer. Thank you, Stephen. Two websites, disclosureproject.org, SEAS, SEAS, power.com.